Welcome to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, this is the time of year for many of you to do your most important lawn care chores. And for those who are battling greasy grubs in your lawn, this is the time of year to take care of them no matter where you live. So we're going to give you a September fall lawn care update with a special emphasis on getting rid of grubs without chemical toxins. But before that, lots of your non-chemically toxic phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Warren, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Yes, how are you?
I'm okay, Warren. How are you?
Good, doing wonderful. Question I have for you is about Roundup or the derivative of Roundup.
Okay, I have a question for you first.
Sure.
Where is Warren Wonderful?
Okay, Warren is wonderful in Arden, Delaware.
Arden, okay. Is that just across the state line from Pennsylvania?
Just barely, yes.
Okay. All right, proceed.
Okay, the glyphosate and or Roundup product as a herbicide. And what I'm wondering is, how can we keep it from getting into our ecosystem, no matter how it's used?
Well, if it's used, you can't keep it out of the ecosystem. That's one of the things. Glyphosate is the active ingredient in Roundup, and the manufacturer, Monsanto, always has the studies done on the active ingredient. But when you buy a Roundup product, a formulation in the stores, there are added materials called sticker spreaders, in the most common word, surfactants, that help the herbicide adhere to the leaf and resist rain and sun and everything like that. Well, who's doing the spraying?
Well, it's the Forest Committee and whatever contractor they
Is this like, do you live in an HOA or condos or something?
It's very similar. It's a very democratic community where everybody votes. Everybody's eligible to vote on every project.
And so far, the votes have led a majority to approve of spraying in the nearby woods?
No. Well, it's an up-and-coming issue here that, we had it banned 10 or 12 years ago, and then it's up-and-coming again where we're taking a look at more detail about, how it can be used and how it can be used safely in our forest, in our community.
Well, it can't be. That's the bottom line, is it can't be used safely. And these so-called invasive plants are actually the plants that are thriving under the conditions of climate change. The old forests are in decline. I mean, we don't have the elms anymore. We don't have the chestnuts anymore. And this is not a recent development. The emerald ash borer is taking care of all our ash trees. But the nice thing that happens is when we lose one of these old specimens, we have new plants that probably came in from other countries or are considered invasive, even though they're native, like poison ivy and Virginia creeper. And people decide that these plants should be killed, but these plants are holding soil in place. They're preventing soil erosion. They're pumping oxygen into the atmosphere. You go out and kill enough plants, and you'll kill off the human community and insect community as well. And you'll never control the woods. Nature is in a constant state of change. New plants are always replacing old. The woodlands in America were never static. New growth is always replacing, especially you think of out west where they have these hideous fires. Well, after those fires go out, the pioneer plants come up and then other plants follow them. And, the structure and nature of the plants get more complex as you get past the disaster. Even when it's flourishing, it won't look like it did before the fire. The status of nature is constant change. And I don't know of any human who's smart enough to say this plant goes and this plant stays. And it's also an endless process. It's like standing in the middle of the ring with a heavyweight and just punching away. You're not going to win.
Right. Yeah. Thanks a lot, Mike.
Take care. My pleasure.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Mary, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Yes. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mary. How are you?
I'm fine, and I appreciate your taking my problem with
my
tree.
It's my problem to take, Mayor. Where are you?
In Chemung, New Jersey.
Or as we should say, because you're in Jersey, what exit?
exit 7 and about 22 miles south of there.
All right. What can we do for Mary in the Garden State?
Well, probably about 6-7 weeks ago, we noticed we have these two blue spruce trees we planted in our backyard, and one is about a foot and a half taller than the other. Well, when we came back from vacation, we saw that the top of the tree had tree rot. We trimmed off about a foot. The tree is about 7 feet tall, and now there's some more rot at the top. But the rest of the tree is just beautiful. It's filled in, and it's gotten all new shoots, and we're kind of beside ourselves as to what to do. Is this some kind of treatment or what?
That's unusual. When these evergreens brown, they usually brown down at the bottom from lack of sun. When you researched this, what did you discover was the cause?
It could be some kind of an insect that invaded the top part of the trunk.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Well, in any event, we have some more rot at the top, and the other tree is about 2 feet away, about 20 feet away from it, and it's just growing just fine. There's nothing at the top, and we live in a meadow, but we have Christmas trees planted for the past 20-some-odd years, and a few of them are blue spruce.
When you planted them, you did take off all the wrappings, right?
Yes.
And is the one that is shorter and has the problems at the top, is that in a wet spot or anything?
No, the one that's taller is the one that has the problem. The one that's about a foot shorter is no problem.
Okay. Well, this is the wrong time of year to do anything, but I'm kind of flummoxed by what's going on. When you got up there to top the tree and you took off the dead part, what else did you see? Did you go down to healthy branch?
No, I haven't got up on a ladder because right. You really can't reach it.
Right.
Just lopped off as much of the brown that he could see, because the whole top, as I said, was brown and shriveled. And so the current shoots that are up at the top, those are browning again, too.
Yeah. The growing tip of an evergreen, like a blue spruce, is the most living part of the tree. This is not a good sign. So here's what you're going to do. You're going to wait until after we have a couple of hard frosts. And then you may have to hire somebody or get some help, get somebody with a bigger ladder, get somebody, you know, who can get you up there. And then what you want to do is prune the top to a conical shape again and cut into green wood. Go beyond the dead wood to make sure you're cutting off healthy wood. Get the dead wood out of there, reshape the top so it looks more correct, and then just hope for the best next spring. But don't cut any more now, because this is the worst time of year to prune anything. You'll expose it to winter injury and just make things worse.
Okay. That sounds fine. I appreciate your help, and we'll see how it goes, and we'll get back with you and let you know the results.
All right. Very good. Good luck, Mayor.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too.
Bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will speak about the importance of luring bug-eating birds to your garden beds at the American Birding Expo in Oaks, PA at 1 o'clock on Saturday, September 22nd. But don't go looking for all the details in the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back to get rid of your grubs, fix your lousy lawn, and take more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com.
You may think the gardening and landscaping season is winding down, but this is prime time to take care of cool season northern lawns and to eliminate grubs in lawns all over the country. We'll tell you how to do all those things after more of your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Savannah, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi. Hi. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Savannah. What a great name. Are you down in Georgia or are you in someplace else?
I'm not. I am in Northern Liberties in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
That's where my father grew up. My father grew up just two blocks from the old Schmitz Brewery, which is now that massive piazza. Grew up on Wilde Street, 2nd and Wilde.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I'm right down. I'm right on 4th and St. John Newman Way.
All right. What can we do you for?
Okay, so I had a quick question. I have a small garden in the back that my grandmother and I tend to. She basically taught me, well, she's still teaching me about planting and gardening and things. And so we have a couple of things back there. Right now we've got 3 tomato plants, and one of them, we try to rotate them every year. And so 2 of them are giving us tomatoes, but then one, I've got all these leaves and it's huge and we have to use those stakes that you stick in the ground to hold it up, but I haven't gotten a single tomato off of it.
Okay.
And we've gotten tomatoes off of the other ones.
Okay, good. What kind of tomatoes have you harvested? Do you know the variety name or the type?
Yes. So we have 1 grape tomato plant and
okay.
1 Roma tomato plant.
Okay.
And the Roma, we've gotten about 1 or 2 Romas, but the grape tomato plant, we've gotten like a handful or so far.
Oh, okay. Grape tomatoes, cherry tomatoes, all those small tomatoes, they produce no matter what. The Romas, which is a classic paste tomato, they tend to come in hot and heavy. I've been growing the classic Roma this year, and I've got a kitchen overflowing with tomatoes. What's the one that's not producing?
The one that's not producing is the cherry.
Oh, that's not a good sign. That's the canary.
That's
the canary
yeah.
in the coal mine. How much sun do they get back there?
They get about a half a day's worth of sun. They're on the side of our house, so we have like that, and then across from that we have cucumbers, and then across from that we have cucumbers.
Okay, what does half a day of sun mean? When does it start?
Maybe 8 in the morning.
Okay. So what are they planted in? There was no native soil there for you to use. What did you use to fill the planters or whatever?
So they're just in the ground so one is in a raised bed. That's fine. And then the other one is where we grew corn last year, where the Romas are. They are where we grew corn last year.
You grew corn in Center City, Philly?
We grew corn.
How did you do?
My mom wanted to experiment. My mom, we got a couple heads of corn off of it. And then she let the plant just kind of died. But
you only planted
my mom
one,
wanted to grow corn.
You only planted one stalk and you got more than one ear?
No, she planted 1, 2, 3, 4. I think 4.
Okay. And
like very close together.
Yeah.
I don't think she was
that's
serious.
Fun.
Yeah, but
no, that's
it, yeah.
gardening should be fun. Now, what have you fertilized these plants with?
So far, just the Miracle-Gro. Grandma, when they look like they're in trouble.
No, go to an independent garden center. Get some compost from this guy, or there's the Greens-Gro that's just outside of Center City, I think on Frankfurt Avenue. You know, where it splits off there at Girard Avenue. They're a great urban garden center. But get off the chemical treadmill. You got to do it.
Okay.
You've had a tough season. You've had lots of rains that have really stressed the plants, heavy rains that came down for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You've had a lot of heat waves. Tomato plants can't pollinate properly when the heat is in the 90s or above. What about flowers? Do you have any flowers on this thing?
No flowers. They're all leaves. And some of the ones down toward the bottom are turning yellow.
Yeah, but it's late in the season. That doesn't matter anymore. Everything's turning yellow, including the gardeners.
Okay.
My guess is there's 2 things that could happen. One is they're just not getting enough sun in this location. You got to think about giving them 6 to 8 hours of good sun. Because if you've got healthy plants but no flowers, that indicates a lack of sun. Give them some compost. You want that compost to be in the soil. And then there's always the chance where you are that they are growing into an old privy. You don't know what's underground in Center City, honey. There's lots of old cesspools and privies. And sometimes when the plant roots get down to them, they take off and grow madly because of the humidor that's down there. But next year, move them to a different place. Give them lots of sun. Tomatoes and peppers need the most sun of anything you're growing. Use compost all season long, good quality compost. And it sounds like you don't have any disease or pest problems, so it's just probably lack of sun.
Okay. Wow. Okay. Thank you so much.
All right. Good luck.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Jack, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Jack. How are you, sir?
Doing very well. Thank you.
Where is Jack doing well?
I'm in Phoenixville, Pennsylvania.
Just outside of Philadelphia.
Absolutely.
All right. What can we do you for?
Well, so I went outside to my backyard with my dog recently, and for the first time in my life, I lived there for 10 years, as has my dog, I saw these big white mushrooms starting to sprout up, almost not completely all over, but all these little spots all over my yard, and I have no idea what they are. I'm not sure if they're poisonous, bad for my dog, you know, I'm not sure if I should be worried or not.
Have you had any work done on the house lately?
Not that I know of. I was away from school for a few months, but I have just started noticing them recently.
I'm asking is there anything that could have generated sawdust in your backyard? Did a tree come down? Was there siding replaced? Anything like that? Anything that could have generated wood products in your backyard?
I know we had done some reworking of our, we have a big porch in the backyard, it's all wooden porch, so I think we were doing some work on that recently.
So what happened is wood scraps and wood debris got into the lawn, and it is the job of the fungal spores in our environment to break that wood down into soil. And they do this by creating mycelium, which is the little root-like structures under those mushrooms. And then the, quote, fruiting body of the mushroom pops up, and that accelerates the decomposition of the wood. So that's why it's always good to have a little bit of cleanliness after you have this kind of work done. How's the yard in general? What's the shape of the grass like?
I'm trying to think. I don't think we haven't cut it very recently, but again, we let our dog out all the time back
right,
there.
Right, right. Are there a lot of bare spots or weeds or stuff like that?
There's like dead patches, I think. Like
excellent.
Throughout certain spots.
Okay, so here's what you're going to do. You're going to go out there and you're going to scalp the lawn near these dead spots. And you're going to cut, you know, I'll give you permission to cut down to 2 inches to take these mushrooms down. Rake as many of them up as you can. It's good to do this sooner than later because the mushrooms will drop seed. They generate these little spores on the undersides of their caps.
Okay.
And those are the seeds that'll continue to sow mushrooms. So I would cut them down. I would rake them up and get them out of there. Then I would get some good quality compost and some matching seed. This is the perfect time to fill in bare spots in a lawn. And I would spread the compost over the entire lawn, spread the seed thickly where you have bare spots, but also spread some throughout the entire lawn. This is called overseeding. And I think this will counteract the mycelium and the decomposition that's going on. And I think it can't hurt. It could get rid of the mushrooms, and you'll have a better-looking lawn. And there's no better time of year to do this overseeding in the Philadelphia area.
Great. Yeah, I'll be sure to do that. Sounds like a perfect plan.
Yeah. Otherwise, you'd have to be out there with a flame weeder. And you may even want to do this in advance if you're worried about the dog. Just toast the mushrooms. And
That'll
even buy you a little bit of time. Once you toast them, they can't drop their spores from the undersides.
What I've done is I'll kind of just like knock them over, or like kind of even like kind of move them or something.
If they've already formed their spores, knocking them over will only spread that seed-like material.
There goes that plan.
So a flame weeder will destroy the seed. It won't be viable. The spores.
Perfect. All right, that sounds like a plan.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much, Mike. Appreciate it.
All right. My pleasure, sir. Take care. Shannon, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi. How are you?
I am just ducky today, Shannon. Thank you for asking. How are you?
Wonderful.
And
looking forward to some gardening advice.
Where is Shannon wonderful?
I am in Monroe, New Jersey.
What can we do for Shannon in the Garden State?
Okay. So my husband and I, we bought a little piece of land. It's about 3.5 acres. But what we didn't realize is we're pretty close to a wetland. And we bought it because I really wanted a huge vegetable garden. We're looking at like maybe 40 by 40 on a nice big vegetable garden. But the ground can get pretty soggy in the spring and the fall. So I assume we're going to have to do a nice raised garden. We're just wondering how high up we should raise it. How do we know how high up to raise it?
Well, Shannon, you can't have bought the house without being told that part of it was wetland.
Well, we knew the wetland was close, and like the front half of the property that's shaded is pretty dry, but the part that gets full sun can get pretty soggy in the fall and the spring.
Okay.
So
I have to tell you, depending on the actual status of the land, you may not be allowed to do anything. When you bought the house, did the deed come with any restrictions about the wetlands?
No. Basically, they said we can't build within 100 feet. So we can't build, gazebos or anything way back by the wetland.
I got to tell you, legally, that's going to include a garden.
I never would have thought of that.
Yeah, a garden is a structure under this form of real estate law. And even gardening organically, you'd be changing the structure of the wetlands, which are there to protect the community. You're in what we call a quandary. Now,
we've already put in a small garden with some raised beds, but that's at the front of the property. So I don't know. I wonder where the cutoff is.
Well, you said within 100 feet, right?
Yeah, but we have 3 acres, so we're pretty far. You can get more than 100 feet away from it.
I'm saying the cutoff is 100 feet away from your house.
No, 100 feet from the wetland.
Oh, but what's the wetland defined by? Is there a stream or anything?
Yeah, there's a stream at the back of the property, mm-hmm. and a back field that's pretty soggy year-round. We don't touch that. And then the front field. There's a front field close to our house, which is, pretty sturdy in the summer, but it's a little spongy in the spring and the fall. So
even in the front?
Yeah, even in the front. I mean, I guess we're just close to it, so the ground has a high water table, I imagine.
Your house is actually built on a wetland.
It probably is.
Good Lord. Nobody told me I'd have to be doing hard math today. Jeez. The safest and sanest way to approach this, boy, and if it's truly a wetland, you can't drain it or anything like that. You can't improve the drainage. What kind of a septic system are you on? Are you on a sewer?
We're on public, yeah. We're
okay.
On public water.
Thank goodness for that. And you say it's shady out front.
Well, it all depends. There's a lot of areas with big old growth trees, so those tend to be pretty shady.
Mm-hmm.
We have a side field. It's the house to the side of the house. There's a huge field. I'd probably say about an acre that gets full sun.
Okay.
So it's beautiful. It's just waiting for something.
Okay. And there's no definition of where your 100 feet starts, though.
No, but that's a good, at least an acre and a half from the stream. So I'm imagining that's pretty.
Okay. I would say then that side field, which you say does not flood, right? It doesn't get really soggy.
That's the problem. Yeah, in the spring, it'll get a bit soggy. Is there any way we could, raise it up a lot?
Well, yeah. I mean, the basic answer is yes. And in the spring, most soils are wet.
Yeah.
Especially if we've had a good snow cover. So here's what I'm going to suggest. You said 40 by 40. So you were planning a flat earth garden?
Yeah, or raised, raised.
No, there's no.
I'm trying to decide.
No, there's no or here. If you. No, I'm serious. Because
that's what we're deciding, yeah.
Is
it too much to raise up? Or
No. There's no decision. You can't grow the vegetables you want in the summer in soggy soil. They have to be able to get their roots dry in between. There's nothing that's going to grow in standing water that you're interested in eating. So you take that 40 by 40, you break it up into raised beds. Now, each of your raised beds should be no wider than 4 feet.
Okay.
But they can be as long as you want. So if you want to maximize the space, you can make railroad beds that go, 20, 30 feet long as you don't mind walking around them.
Well, that's a good idea.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, you can maximize the space here, but you have to have 2 feet of walking lanes in between each raised bed.
Okay.
Frame them out well. Normally we say a foot. I would raise your beds up by a foot and a half to make sure that the roots will be in dry soil at some time. And obviously only use organic practices. Only fertilize with compost and don't spray anything. Nothing at all.
Okay. We use a little hot pepper and garlic in the summer.
That would be.
I assume that's organic.
That would be fine, yes.
Oh, that's a great idea. So you think about 18 inches to 2 feet would be a good height for the bed.
Yes, because you want these beds to dry out at some point, even if the soil below them is still saturated.
Oh, that sounds like a good plan. I guess we'll get started on that.
Yeah.
That's a lot of work.
Well, the nice thing about a raised bed garden is you do the work once. And then because of the raised bed situation where weeds can't get into them and grass can't grow up into them, you wind up saving hundreds of hours every summer afterwards. So look at it as a long-term investment that you're going to amortize over the decades.
Would you till up the turf underneath before laying out the beds?
No.
No.
No,
just
never.
Just pop them right on there.
Yeah, and you want to disturb the soil as little as possible.
That sounds wonderful. Thank you so much.
All right, Shannon, good luck.
Thanks. Bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will travel down south to speak about the importance of horticultural therapy when I appear at a benefit for a very special healing garden on Tuesday, October 23rd at the beautiful Country Club of North Carolina in Pinehurst. But don't go checking the events section of our website for all the details just yet, because we'll be right back to get rid of your grubs, fix your lousy lawn, and take more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. In just a little bit, we will get rid of your greasy, grimy, gruesome grubs and fix your lousy lawn. But before we do that, we're taking more of your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Jimmy, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, how you doing?
I am ducky today. Jim, how are you doing?
I'm great.
And where is Jimmy great?
Glassboro, New Jersey.
Okay, the Garden State. What can we do you for?
I have what I believe are silver maples or gray maples in my front yard.
Yeah, they're terrible.
Yeah, and the township topped 2 out of the 4 trees that I have, and they're leaning towards the house at about a 15-degree pitch.
Okay, wait a minute. When did the township top them?
I am not sure. I just moved into this house 2 months ago.
Oh, okay. And the damage was already done?
Yes.
Okay. So when you moved in, what did the trees look like? Were they fully leafed out at least?
Yes. Okay. Some of the lower branches, towards the way that they're leaning,
yeah.
The bottom branches are dead and there are no leaves or anything. And we just kind of walk by and pull them down because they fall on the grass anyway.
Okay. So I'm going to cut to the chase here. I'm going to suggest that they prune them at the wrong time of year. And these trees are dying. Are you near power lines or something?
Yeah, the utility lines are on the opposite side towards the street.
And now, you say you've only been there 2 months, and you can see a significant difference in the leaning?
Not significant. I'm just saying it's definitely leaning towards the house. I don't know if it's going to get worse. Because I plan on being here for a long time.
It ain't going to get better.
Yeah. Is there a way to correct it? Or is
no.
It just like,
no, and the trees are not worth saving. Silver maples are trash trees. They're really known for being very brittle and dropping their branches in windstorms and ice storms.
Yeah.
And they can drop on your pumpkin head. So, you know, and that's all she wrote if that happens. So I would call the township. I would ask them to send out their arborist and have him or her take a good look at the trees. And then these trees, should they recover, they're going to grow right back up into the power lines, right?
Yeah.
So what do you want to do here? Do you want to get rid of these trees, which are, they'll give you some decent shade, but they are honestly dangerous? Or would you like to just give the township permission to take them down to the ground, and then somewhere nearby, you plant what you want? You plant some nice trees, like a paper bark maple or flowering cherry, something that's nice and going to be well-behaved.
Yeah, that sounds like the plan. I have one follow-up question, too.
Go ahead.
So pretty much all the leaves that I can see on this tree have black spots that almost look like tar drippings.
Yeah, it's called tar spot.
Okay, is that just burning up and being dry and dying? Or
no, it's actually a disease. It's a disease that's either only for maples or it's very common in maples. It's cosmetic only. It doesn't hurt anything, but it looks ugly as heck. And generally, it's a sign that the trees have been stressed. My opinion without looking at them is that the top was cut off, the bottoms are dying, these things don't have long to go. And I talked to the township. It's in their financial interest, really, to take these things down and be done with it, not have to be coming out and topping them and making them look rude, you know, every couple of years. And then whatever you plant, you'll plant far enough away that it's not going to grow into the power lines. And this way the stumps won't have to be removed all the way. Because if you don't plant in the exact same spot, you can leave the stump in the ground. And you have a couple of options there. You can have the stump ground down to ground level. You could box it off and make a planter there. Or you could leave like a significant amount standing, like a couple of feet. And then you could use it as a place to sit stuff down outside. That stump will be there for a long time. You could use it as a little outdoor table to put your tools down on or something like that. But if you have it ground completely to the ground, box it out, fill it with soil, and plant flowers or something in it.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
Yeah. And then further back from the power lines, plant really good trees. These probably were not even planted, Jim. They probably just blew in on the wind.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
All right. My pleasure, sir. Good luck.
Thanks.
Doris, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike, and thank you for taking my call.
Well, thank you for making it, Doris. Where are you?
I'm in Old City, Philadelphia, but the garden is in Valley Kenwood.
Oh, okay. All right. Very good. May I ask where in Old City? That's such an interesting area.
It certainly is. I'm at 4th and Market.
Oh, man, it's happening there on Saturday night.
I know. I am not a part of it, but I'm on the fringes.
Yeah, no, that's a wild area on the weekends. That's when you escape to your country home, huh?
My home church is there, and that's what I'm calling about.
Oh, okay, good. What can we do for you?
Okay, out there in Valley Kenwood, left from the big old estate, is St. Asaph Church at Conshohocken State Road and City Line Avenue.
Okay.
A lovely campus. It must be over an acre, and I undertook on a volunteer basis to do a strange plot, 15 by 15, near the entrance to the church hall and the offices.
Right.
And it has been dug up so many times to make basements and put down pipes that are no longer used. And bottom line, subsoil. And about 4 years ago, I started to improve it and had a plan in the back of my mind and what it was to get something pretty much self-sustaining.
Right.
So I bought a Crimson Queen red maple.
Oh, nice.
And the theory is with all that shade it puts out, as it matures, it's going to be almost from edge of the plot to the other edge, 15 by 15 feet. There we go.
Right.
And put all interesting ground covers and things like that. And some of the people who come to church there donated some of their ferns and ginger and stuff like that there. And gradually we added things. Now, the latest was bulbs up in the front. That's really the low ground covers. It's ground covers in a tree, basically.
Right.
In all this clay, suitable for bricks.
Okay.
And I've been putting in every year, and since then, gypsum.
Okay.
And because there's so much stuff now underneath, I just put it on the top and scratch it a little and let it work its way down, figuring, you know, it's nasty stuff. And that's the basis for this call. It's now getting to be dark soil.
Okay.
Underneath it still is clay way
right
down, but I'd like to introduce worms. I keep thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
But can their gut tolerate such grit, you know?
Well, I would stop with the gypsum.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's has been an old folk remedy for clay soil for a long time. I've really never seen any indication that it actually works. And if your soil is being improved, I would suggest that you have worms in there now because you've created the kind of environment that worms like to live in. What I would suggest you do instead of gypsum or even introducing worms, which can be really dicey,
yes,
is you find a good source of municipal compost or high-quality compost somewhere nearby. And this is not that big an area, so just get some help. And I would just shovel on the equivalent of an inch of compost and let that settle down around the little ground covers and the ferns. And it has been shown in university studies that adding an inch of compost to the surface of a lawn over the years actually improves the clay soil underneath the roots of the lawn.
That is big news.
the compost works its way down, improves the organic matter. It's the kind of thing that earthworms that are native in that area, they're going to come running towards it. But we can get into all kind of trouble when we start introducing worms. There are a group of scientists who fear that fishermen have left bait worms in the forest and they're changing the forest floor. So you don't want to be moving worms around, and there's no reason to, because you say this is a whole acre. There's worms there.
No, my little patch is 15 by 15.
Right, right, but this is in the middle of a big acre of other stuff.
Yeah, it's near an entrance with a lot of building shade.
So I would just add some compost every season in the spring, ideally, and then worms will naturally cultivate that area
for you. Let me ask another question quickly. I have an offer of chopped up leaves, and I was hesitant because sometimes they can compact. If I can't get compost, there's time and treasure involved here.
Oh, yeah.
When do I have any of each?
Shredded leaves are the best attractor of earthworms. Earthworms naturally live under shredded leaf litter. If you can spread it, and, you know, not smother your little ground covers, shredded leaves make the absolute best mulch for attracting earthworms who are going to improve the soil. In this case, better than compost.
Wow. Okay. I have a friend in Narberth there who may help me with that.
What you want to do is have your friend triple shred the leaves for you so that they're very fine. And spread those as much as you can, and you're going to have earthworms in abundance.
Okay, I'll just put it between the ground covers. They haven't totally all met yet.
Oh, absolutely then. Nature abhors a bare surface.
You have that right. All right, you've answered a whole bunch of questions here. I'm very, very happy.
All right, good luck, Doris.
Thanks a lot.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right. As promised, Brett Rader, producer of You Bet Your Garden. Are you ready for the question of the week?
Of course. What's the title?
September is the time for lawn care and repair.
Well, that's true if you have a cool season lawn composed of bluegrass and or fescue, but this is not the time of year to do anything to a warm season grass like Bermuda or Zoysia. Right? Mike? That's right, right? Stephen in Ellicott City, Maryland writes, when is the best time to apply milky spore to control Japanese beetle grubs in the lawn? And how often should it be applied?
In the summer, Japanese beetles and other members of the scarab beetle family feed and copulate on your roses. Then the females lay their eggs in unprotected soil, or in the case of Japanese beetles, almost exclusively in turf grass.
And they're looking for lawns that are overly wet or cut too short, so you can limit the damage by keeping the lawn cut at the correct height and strategically withholding water.
So the eggs hatch out little grubs that turn into big grubs that then eat the roots of your grass.
Well, I live in the city. I don't have grass.
Move to Colorado. Now, this is the time of year when milky spore, a naturally occurring, quote, disease, a disease that only affects beetle grubs, is most effective when the soil is warm and the grubs are feeding. Any grub that ingests one of the milky spores now will die and become a milky spore machine, theoretically reinfecting the lawn for years to come.
But why is it called milky spore?
Because if it works, the grubs actually turn a milky white. Now, most researchers feel that milky spore only affects the grubs of Japanese beetles and not their cousins like rose chafers and Asiatics. But BTG, the new strain of BT, affects all grubs.
Oh, is that the Beetlejuice we were talking about earlier this year?
No, close. That's the brand name Gardens Alive gave to the type of BTG that you spray on plants under attack by the adult beetles. They call the version for lawn use Grub Halt. And I believe that both of these BTG products are also available at retail under other brand names. Make sure the label says Bacillus thuringiensis.
Gesundheit. Lionel in Elk Ridge, Illinois writes, my lawn is overgrown with crabgrass and dandelion. The development was stripped of its topsoil, and what's left is sandy. It's a mostly sunny yard. I'm swearing off weed and feed and the guys that come around and spray, but the neighbors are starting to give me that look. I know it will take some time to grow a healthy lawn, but I'm desperate to give it a go. Any suggestions on how to start?
Well, it shouldn't take all that long. Illinois is the perfect place for a cool season grass, and September is the perfect time to sow it. First, torch the crabgrass with a flame weeder to toast as many of the dropped weed seeds as possible. And despite being, quote, sandy, those dandelions reveal that this soil is compacted. So either till it all up and rake away as much green material as you can, or have a core aeration performed to reduce the soil compaction.
Then level it out if you had it tilled, have a big load of compost or aged mushroom soil delivered, spread that an inch or two thick, and then level that out, right? Isn't that the part that you say people always forget?
Yes, indeedy. How can you cut the future lawn at an even 3 inches if the soil looks like a roller coaster underneath? So sow the fresh seed into that leveled compost, and then just go over it with a rake until most of the seed is covered.
No straw or other nonsense, right?
Yeah, nonsense depends. Straw, no. Then water it as gently as possible for about a half hour every morning. The new grass should be up and growing fast, then back off slowly until you can get to normal once a week watering.
Okay, one more, real quick. Lincoln in Cherry Hill writes, "We just moved into a new house. The backyard soil is compacted and the grass is brown and patchy. I'm planning on aerating, applying compost and corn gluten meal, and then overseeding with fescue. What sequence would you recommend?"
First, you aerate, then you apply the compost.
Make sure you level it out.
And then you sow the new seed. No corn gluten now. Corn gluten meal inhibits all seeds from germinating, including grass seed. So use the corn gluten in the spring to take care of any crabgrass seeds you missed in the fall. Well, that sure was a lot of information about lawns, grubs, and corn gluten meal now, wasn't it? Luckily, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. Just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week, and you will always find the latest question of the week at the Gardens Alive website. Yikes, my producer is threatening to guard my grubs. If I don't get out of this studio, we must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, you're tired, you're poor, you're wretched, refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org.
Please include your location. Please, please, please.
And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you'll find the answers to all your garden questions, audio of this show, past shows, and our priceless podcast. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our vice president of production is Terry Murray. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Our engineer is Al Banks. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work and stay current with what's happening with this show at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Larissa Sapko and Rich Banowitz keep our website grub-free. Editor Al Banks has never eaten the roots of growing grass, or so he says. Our grubby producer is Brett the Viking Raider. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and I want to give a shout-out to grounds, volunteers, security, and all of the other wonderful volunteers who make the fabulous Philadelphia Folk Festival possible, especially the trash crew. Trash rules. And because of that fact, I will be all cleaned up in time to see you again next week. Oh, and the craft people, the non-crafty people, and especially apologies to anybody who was nearby when I tried to sing along. That's why there's therapy. Oh, and sorry about your frightened children.